a level of fear where, you know, what is the point of a university if we have homogeneity of thought and silence?
We're going to have to.
It makes no sense.
We're going to have to leave it there. But of course, we'll continue to follow this issue. 8 more international students have had their visas revoked. 150 have been revoked in the last few weeks. Fordham professor Christina Greer will link to your New York Times op-ed, Black Americans Are Not Surprised. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Thank you so much for joining us.
State laws ban abortion for 1 in 3 women across the country. They are forced to remain pregnant or travel out of state for the care they need, depending how far they have to travel, whether they drive themselves or take other methods of transportation, how long they may have to stay, and countless other factors like lost wages or childcare. Plus the cost of the medical care itself. The financial burden can be overwhelming, if not impossible to afford. To see each of their stories and to learn about the real cost of having to travel for abortion access, visit bandsoff.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, as well as 107.3 FM. And over the internet at WUSB.FM, 24 hours a day. 7 days a week. It's just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night. That means it's time for another episode of Off the Wall. Very good evening to all. It's another edition of Off the Wall, the decline and fall of Western civilization. Emmanuel here, Kyle over there.
Yes.
Was that tagline always part of our show? I don't think it was.
Yeah, I think that was a new edition.
Did someone hack us? I think that's possible. How are you this week, Kyle?
Did you just call me Kale?
I sort of started to call you Kyle and aborted somehow because I got distracted by something on the other side of the room. But, Kyle, how are you?
I'm here.
Okay.
I like the blustery spring weather.
It's windy. It's really windy.
It's a combination of, like, sun and rain, like the April showers that bring the May flowers. So,
as in the boat that came over
No, next month when spring's really happening. But I'm noticing all the, like, new growth, and it can be kind of nice. Like, like it helps you synchronize with, like, oh, wow, everything's emerging, and helps you have that extra boost when you're doing all the sorts of spring cleaning and moving ahead on all the things that support you and keep you thriving. So I hope everyone feels that as well, despite as much distraction and sort of external tension that I think we'll probably be covering in this show. Those are those little everyday reminders that are right under your nose or right in front of you, and just take time out to make sure that you observe that. And it's something that, because I think it can help fuel past a lot of the, like, uncertainty or moments of doubt or despair. That's what I do. I'm finding a lot of power in just keeping going, keep on keeping on. What else can we do? It's like the human condition, right? It's like, you know, we didn't want this fight. We didn't want to have to be battling so much just for normal stuff, like everyday stuff, or even boring stuff that is sort of in the political weeds or not things people typically focus on. But when it hits home and there's protests and hundreds of thousands of people, I don't know. It becomes a different thing. People start really only talking about those things, and that's great. But you can't let things around you fall apart. You can't forget to tell people that you love them or that you have their back. You're supporting people that have supported you. Make sure they know that. And that you're available, even if you feel like you can't muster it or you can't be accessible in the same ways. You need to make the effort.
The little things are the most important things. And what you say about just getting out there, doing some spring cleaning, maybe some gardening, you're kind of tied to people all around the world doing the exact same thing. Doesn't matter where you're from. And it's also timeless. It's what previous generations and future generations will be doing as well. And so there's a sense of peacefulness in just diving into that before you get involved in all the other crap.
And the reason I mentioned the spring emergence of new growth and stuff, that it's a sort of biomimicry. I know that's a catchphrase in certain elements of future design where you borrow from nature, but I am actually saying that the growth and stuff that emerges at this time of year can be something that we can mimic in our everyday lives to keep moving ahead when we feel like, oh, we're not as motivated or the conditions are making it impossible to move ahead on things. No, you can be inspired. You can keep forging ahead with the little wins, the little everyday battles or challenges that actually make you stronger and better able to operate and feel with a sense of like strong well-being. Because I was reading something too, like that's a source of I guess mental well-being those interactions. So don't discount like that social the humor or fun, let's say positive experience with total strangers. Those are very good moments to remind you that you have a vital place in the society, the people around you, the connectedness as well. I guess that's the other part I'm forgetting.
Yeah.
But it's also very much something we see in nature where various systems, various plant and animal species are all sort of connected with this intricate, unseen, in some cases, web. Well, we're in the same way. We're in the same boat with a lot of people around the world. They're noticing things from the outside about our place here. Invariably, they've met people who are American. They've purchased or used American products. They are knit into that fabric that was what we understood as globalization and all the virtues that were thrown about as why it was necessary to, like, offshore or otherwise change our economic structures. Well, here's this sort of ebb and flow of it coming back. We're being told, okay, now it has to be restructured this way. People take note. There are going to be various transformations and changes if this is actually enacted, if people accept this, that will be permanent, that will span people's lifetimes and ways of being economically and socially and internationally that they've not known in their entire lifetimes or even their parents' lifetimes. So yeah, the little seemingly insignificant things going on here in the U.S., as much as we might want to, like, bring things into domestic policy and cut ourselves off, we're not an island. We're incredibly connected to people, and people feel the tumult and tension that many Americans are experiencing as a result of some of these moves economically. I'm specifically talking about the tariff thing. It's unavoidable. We're going to have to talk about it.
Oh, the tariffs. Yeah, I guess we'll touch upon that. You talk about ebb and flow and changing things. You know, I feel like this is like the ebb. Do you remember the tsunami back in the early part of the century? Yeah, the flow is about to hit, or it's already hitting. Oh, my God. Where do I begin? Well, I'm just looking at the New York Times here. I've got the app open. I'm just going to look at the headlines that are lined up here. Markets slide again hours before new tariffs hit China and other nations. Trump tariffs are already reducing car imports and idling factories. Wall Street bursts with anger over tariff stupidity. Will retaliation work for Europe? It's a gamble. Justices give Trump a tentative win and push to fire 16,000 federal workers. In Trump cases, Supreme Court retreats from confrontation, which is not a good thing. Oh, my God, it just keeps going. And one headline after another, just a mess. Staff cuts, rush changes, and anxiety at Social Security. IRS to share migrants' tax data with ICE, raising legal questions. Jenner and Block, law firm targeted by Trump, files to permanently block order. And then Tulsi Gabbard gets involved. It's just too much. It's too much for anyone.
So if you're wrapped up in any of that, appreciate some totally unrelated interaction that you have in your week on a different level. Like, really feel that experience and tune in with people. Try to understand what their impression of things right now are.
Plant some marigolds is what I want to do right now.
That too. But I think when things you're so comfortable with are in disarray, there's great comfort in just, you know, supporting a local coffee place or just interacting with your neighbors or going on a walk and having a good conversation with people that you don't normally talk to. I think those things become really valuable when other stuff has lost its value and lost sort of any sense of meaning.
Yeah. These last few days have been really fascinating, though. I don't know anything about the stock market. You know, I really don't even care about the stock market, but I do find it interesting to follow in times of crisis sometimes. And I've been watching CNBC. That's the business channel. There's two CNBCs. There's the one we get here in the United States, and then there's the world CNBC. Did you notice there's a world CNBC? And it's much better because they're on 24 hours a day covering all kinds of different stock markets. So at like 3 in the morning, they're talking about China. They're talking about Singapore. Or Australia, places like that. And then it moves over to Europe, and they just keep updating and making it interesting. And for me to find a business channel interesting is rather unusual. But here in the States, they're playing repeats of Dateline and Shark Tank, and you know, I guess we're not that interested over here, and you think we would be.
Yeah, they only cover stuff when the market's open on that channel here.
No, when our market is open. They don't care about the other markets.
Right, when the market.
The
I mean,
market.
When I say the market, I mean the American market.
Yeah, so that's kind
how of... self-centered, I guess, we are.
Anyway, today, U.S. stocks dove following another stunning reversal, with Wall Street veering from a huge gain at the opening of trading to more losses at the close. Yeah, you know, when I woke up today, I looked at the numbers just because I'm curious. You know, I like watching numbers sometimes, and the stock market was up by over 1,000 points, and it's like, okay, so I guess they're taking back some of their losses. But then Trump opened his mouth, and it just dove down again, and well below the beginning. I think it was 320 points, say 0.8% of the value. Yeah, whatever that means. Because apparently what we're going to do, what we being the United States, is set new tariffs on China, and tomorrow, and keep in mind, it's already tomorrow over there, tariffs on China will be 104%. It's getting insane. Trump is going to impose an astounding 104% in tariffs across all Chinese imports on Wednesday. Now, China was already set to see tariffs increase by 34%, but when they dared to respond to us giving them a 34% tariff, Trump decided he was going to punish them by tacking on another 50%. Yeah. And that brings it up to 84%. How did it get to 104%? There's another 20 in there.
34.
50 plus 34 is 84.
84.
So where'd the other 20 come from? This is why I don't do the stock market. Okay, so Trump initially imposed a 10% tariff.
Okay.
In February. And, okay, so that brings it down to another 10% somewhere. You know what? It doesn't matter. It's all nonsense. It's all crazy. But the thing is, the whole world is seeing just how crazy we are, how crazy he is. You know, these are the things that people have been talking about for months. This is what will happen if you reelect Trump. You reelected Trump, this is what's happening. So we got to deal with it and to try and get through it as best we can and let the rest of the world know this ain't us, even though we're the ones that did it. This, you know, this isn't what the American people want. I really don't think. Even those people that thought voting for Trump was going to help them, yeah, that sigh, that's pretty much what I send your way. After that, you know, I think we're all in the same boat, and we need to work together to get this to stop and to reverse all the horrible things that are going on right now. Major step this weekend, all the people converging throughout the country. What was it, 1,000, over 1,000 different demonstrations, some as close as Port Jefferson here on Long Island, New York City. I heard hundreds of thousands of people in New York City. I heard that on Channel 2. I don't know if that's real or if it's tens of thousands. It was a lot of people. It was a hell of a lot of people, and by far not the only city. Washington, D.C., Boston, San Francisco, Seattle, everywhere. People showing up outraged and fighting back, and this is what we need. This is what we needed before, but it's what we need now, and that is the kind of thing that inspires change, people demanding change, the worst nightmare of any regime, and you better believe this is not what Trump wants. So, that's something I think that's very inspirational, something that I've been waiting for, and it's great to see, and seeing what happens in the rest of the world. You know, how other countries are responding to the nonsense that our government is up to. Canada, for instance, you know, every day I just want to apologize to Canada on behalf of our insane leaders. You know, I see the warnings to Canadian citizens on Canadian TV and you know, basically telling them that, yeah, you know, you could be detained for no reason. It could happen just by crossing the border. You can have your phone taken from you. And this is the thing that everybody needs to know, American and people from all around the world, is that border control, at least here in this country, I'm not sure about other countries, but in this country, they seem to think they have the right to just take your phone and read everything that's on it. Think about that. Everything. Every email. Every website you visit. Every message you send. Every tweet you like or whatever social media platform. Your Facebook post. All of it. They think they can demand your passwords so they can log in as you and read all this information. And if you don't do it, you can be detained. And that goes for American citizens as well as foreign citizens. And it's insane. It's nothing new, too, by the way. They've claimed this right for years now. Personally, I've never recognized that right, and I would never give my phone to anyone who is, you know, demanding this intrusive access. How dare they? But this is exactly what they are doing. So we need to figure out ways to protect ourselves from this kind of intrusion, ways of deleting certain apps so that they're not accessible, restoring them as soon as we get to where we need to go, and otherwise protecting ourselves. This goes for laptops as well as phones. It's a real war on privacy that is being waged against us as a part of the overall insanity. We need to be aware, and we need to not be victims.
Certainly, the strictures and kind of guidelines that are very much basically something that crept in or was sort of nibbled away at during post 9/11 and the Iraq, Afghanistan conflicts, the anti-terror Patriot Act era policies that came into effect around air travel have had this be something that is used internationally in other countries, but also in our own country. In recent memory, it had been only non-citizens that would be subjected to this, but it is very quickly in this era become something that citizenship that is arbitrary of your actual citizenship, whether you're an American or someone from elsewhere. The Customs and Border Protection has only taken more of this power and used more of what legal cover they have at the border to be ever more intrusive. This is something that was much more common in places that are a bit more authoritarian, a la Russia and many other countries apart from the U.S. And in rare cases, we would cover, like, a reporter or someone with a controversial opinion or someone that was an activist or some case that would crop up. It would foment a reaction. People would be surprised by this, but now it's sort of being instituted en masse, and I think it's incumbent upon everyone to give them nothing. I mean, refuse if you have the power to do that. And the Canadians are already, like, giving this kind of guideline. I heard a program over the weekend, Cross-Country Checkup on CBC. They were talking about this, basically guidelines for travel, going through customs and border prior to leaving the country. In other words, doing pre-check while you're still in the country. Stuff like that to where you can guard yourself and walk away from that border with relative ease. So I'm saying, yeah, give them nothing in the sense of refusing to participate in this security charade. And also, if you are there and you are in a position where you have to forfeit a device of some kind, make sure it has nothing on it. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing.
Exactly.
Open a brand new phone in front of them, whatever. Like, they don't deserve this. This has never been something that we would have accepted. And I think that this is something we need to instill in people who might not know another kind of society that have grown up around the sort of Patriot Act draconian measures around privacy. Like, your device should be your device, and if whether it is wildly encrypted or just blank and brand new, it should be your choice how you use it. And if you have reason to obfuscate your activities online, those reasons should be respected. If you're careless, if you're under investigation for other stuff, I'm sure there are other ways they can institute what warrant they have. But just an arbitrary one at a border because they're a border agent, to me and to most, I think, Americans and patriots alike, all of us, that is our expectation, to not be under suspicion unless warranted, and just crossing a border shouldn't warrant that.
Unless warranted, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless there's a warrant.
I'm using that language.
Yes.
For sure, but it is not the case in how it's being practiced now. One other thing I wanted to point out is there is not an appetite for opposition from the Trump following, disciples of Trump, shall we say. They're there for the party in victory. They're there for the party in support of his election. But in reaction to this, one of the comments I'd heard about some of these protests is that people that are supportive and disciples of Trump, they aren't seeing very many counter actions at these protests because in their mind, they might have whatever kinds of reason, but in my perspective, what I would say is that it is the harder part of this, the fighting against being in opposition, fighting against this regime that takes work. The you know, rah-rah campaign side of it and winning allows you and has them, I think, resting on their laurels in ways Trump did not anticipate. And of course, his planning for this was, hey, we'll just go ahead, institute these tariffs, then rationalize it with our cult following that, we have to institute these to lower inflation, even though that's not the actual result they're going to get. So the duping of, there aren't that many people well primed to be duped because most people have realized a long time ago that this is not going to go well, or they're too kind of happy with themselves, shall we say, to pay attention in the first place.
I think there's too many people that are giving him a wide berth and saying, yes, we need to do this in order to make things better. And, you know, at some point, folks, you're going to realize that you're being duped. You are definitely being duped. And that is, it's going to hurt, and it's hurting right now.
But they're not saying that from the streets. They're saying that from their easy chair.
Right, right. Yeah, it's really disturbing to see all of this happening. But you know, one thing that we have said many times over the years, talking about government, police enforcement wanting to have access to as much as possible, if they could read your brain waves, they would demand to do that. They would say, we cannot do our job unless we're able to read these brainwaves, because that's how we know what someone's going to do next. They do not have the right to do that. Unless you give them that right, then they always will have that right. Same as with phones and computers that you carry with you. You have the right to privacy. You have the right to keep things off limits to whoever you decide has limits to your device. So, you know, if you encrypt something on your computer and it's obvious that it's something encrypted, they're going to demand that you unencrypt it. They will do that, and they will hold you until you do. And it's not right. It's not fair. We need to fight this, but that's how it is right now. So the best solution is to copy your data and have it waiting for you somewhere so that you can download it when you're safe. And you are not safe crossing a border. In fact, you're not even safe 80 miles from a border, because ICE is there too. They have stops all over the place to demand your papers. It's really getting crazy out there. But Kyle, you mentioned CBC, and I just wanted to remind people of this. You were listening to a program on CBC. You all can do that. Now, you shouldn't turn away from WUSB. I'm not suggesting that. But there are times when you can take a little break sometimes, or, you know, at your leisure. There's a CBC app for Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And on that app, you can listen anywhere in the world to CBC programming. They speak English just like we do. It's very easy to understand. And you can get their perspective. And it's oftentimes really, really interesting. No commercials. And the program you're listening to on Sunday, Cross Country Checkup, is an awesome program where basically they take calls and you just hear what Canadian citizens are concerned about, and it's fascinating. It really is fascinating. It's it opens up your eyes to what's going on right to the north of us, and said, a damn shame what we're doing to the poor people there, and in so many other places as well. It really is absolutely terrible. As we're talking about radio, I would be remiss to not to mention, not to remind people that we are in Radiothon, and what Radiothon is our way of keeping this radio station going by asking for funds from our community listeners. And those listeners can be anywhere. You can be in New York. You can be in New Jersey. You can be in the studios of WUSP. You can be in Japan. You can be on the International Space Station. It doesn't matter where you are. If you're human and have access to a phone or internet connection, you can either call us, 631-632, WUSB, I think, is the pledge, or is it 6901? One of those, 631-632-6901. If there are people there, otherwise it'll go to voicemail, and you can leave your contact info, and people will get back to you. Or you can go to WUSB.fm, WUSB.fm, and you will see the instructions there on how you can pledge and keep WUSB on the air for many, many decades to come. Because, believe me, a radio station is a powerful tool of communication. It's a way that people can get information out. It's dangerous to the status quo. Because, you know, people in charge want to control everything. But WUSB has always been kind of a wild beast, you know, that does its own thing. Opens up the phone lines, opens up the microphones, is open to all kinds of different ideas and interpretations. Lets you decide for yourself. You don't have to agree with what we're saying, but the fact that you're listening means the world to us. And we want to hear from you as well in all different ways. You can write to us, otw@2600.com, and give us your feedback. We have a couple of letters we're going to read in a second. But most importantly, to keep 90.1 and 107.3 broadcasting so that people can hear us in their cars, in their homes, can listen to the archives, and basically hear all kinds of music they never heard before, hear all kinds of news and ideas and opinions and perspectives that perhaps they may never have even considered. I know that was me once, you know, not knowing any other way than the way I was brought up. Then I came to Stony Brook, and wow, my head opened up a bit. Learned all kinds of things. So, yeah, not only are you doing that for yourself, you're doing that for all the people who listen in the future that might not even know about this place yet. So, WUSB.fm is the website. Please pledge whatever you can afford and keep WUSB strong for many, many decades to come. All right, are you ready for some good news, Kyle? I've got good news.
Yes.
This just happened. The Associated Press is allowed back in the White House, at least according to a federal judge who has ordered the White House today to restore the Associated Press's full access to cover presidential events. Trivia question, why was the Associated Press banned from the White House?
Because they would not identify the Gulf the way they wanted Gulf to be identified.
The Gulf. What is this Gulf you speak of?
The Gulf.
which don't be afraid, Kyle.
It's on the south of our country.
No. What's it called? What's the Gulf called?
It's a body of water.
Damn it, Kyle. Did they get to you? No. Say the name. Say the name the whole world says.
It's west of Florida.
No, I know where it is. We all know where it is.
Yeah, the Gulf.
If I walk to a map now that was bought before last month, it will say something. What will it say? This is what will happen, people. This is what will happen if you don't fight back. I didn't even see it right next to me. And Kyle was being infiltrated. You want to give it one last shot before I read the story?
The Gulf that's next to Mexico.
All right. U.S. District Judge Trevor N. McFadden, who'll be very disappointed in you, Kyle, an appointee of President Donald Trump? Wow. Okay. So one of his own appointees ruled against him. Sometimes judges surprise you and do the right thing. You know, like Amy Coney What's her name again? I never get it right.
That's it.
You
got it.
Amy Comey Barrett.
You got this.
Do I really? Because I don't want to make a fool of myself.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, I'm bad with
Amy Comey Barrett.
With three names and one person. She's been ruling against him in several cases.
Because
which,
she can. It's called agency.
Sometimes we forget that even though people are appointed by other people, they don't always take their side.
Well,
unfortunately, most of the Supreme Court doesn't seem to follow that, but there are exceptions.
There's a trend in judges learning and understanding the meaning of agency.
Yeah, yeah. It should be the rule, not the exception.
It's quite a trend.
Anyway, Trevor, I shouldn't refer to him by his first name, the Honorable Lord McFadden, an appointee of President Donald Trump, ruled that the government cannot retaliate against the AP's decision not to follow Trump's executive order to rename the Gulf of Mexico. The decision handed the AP a major victory at a time when the White House has been challenging the press on several levels, this by far being the silliest. Under the First Amendment, McFadden wrote, if the government opens its doors to some journalists, be it to the Oval Office, the East Room, or elsewhere, it cannot then shut those doors to other journalists because of their viewpoints. The Constitution requires no less. Now, since this White House doesn't believe in obeying laws, it's unclear whether they will actually allow the AP back into the building. They've been blocked since February 11th, simply because they won't rename a body of order that Trump has no right to rename. It's an international body of order. It's just so ridiculously silly. He wants them to say Gulf of America, and they are not going to do that, and they rightfully should not.
Does that count as body shaming?
It's
a body of
Gulf
water.
Shaming, but yeah, I guess you could go with that.
Body. So are they building a large breed pet door for the AP to go through?
You know, who knows how they're going to mess
with
them.
What indignity will they suffer?
I can hardly wait. I can hardly wait to see what they do. But this judge mentioned the Constitution. The Constitution requires no less. Somebody told me this, that this is a great tactic to use if you're at a demonstration. And there will be many demonstrations to come. Finally, we've turned the corner, and people are seeing. I think maybe Cory Booker with his 25 hours last week inspired a lot of people. But we're starting to show up in the streets, outside offices, outside Tesla dealerships. And one thing that is a very good tactic, because there are counter-demonstrators that show up to these things, and I don't really know what they're supporting, because everything that's happening is just so negative.
Diminutive numbers, but not insignificant.
Yeah, it's enough to intimidate people. And but if you start a chant that says "Protect the Constitution," they're kind of put in a difficult place, because they claim to be people who do support the Constitution. Yet there are many instances where the Constitution is not being followed or is being ignored that this administration is in the thick of. And so if you make that one of your key points, that you are there to protect the Constitution and you have an American flag because this is your country too, it kind of puts them in a very uneasy spot, and they're less likely be loud and boisterous, and they might even start thinking for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's once removed from ex-Trump supporters who are there protesting his policies, who can speak their language and say, like, no, this is not what we voted for.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that.
That's, I mean, it's the next best thing, and I hope those people are out there among their fellow citizens that they might not have voted with,
mm-hmm.
But they see kinship in the action and what needs to be said. And I'm very proud of this. I'm very happy this is going on in many places across the country. I was talking about this after the actual election last year, and it needs to be a practice. It needs to be something we exercise. It's exercising your right. You need to go out there and beat this... Beat feet, be on your toes, and making those signs, making your voice heard, and practicing this. This is a practice of protest, and it will get bigger. It will get cohesive. It should start in small ways. You're not going to get, in this country, people that have been so comfortable simply voting and then going about their lives to jeopardize their work week or their, you know, school attendance or their obligations to family and responsibilities in their community. They're not going to stick their necks out. They're not going to put that on the line unless they have fellow protesters that are aligned and cooperating and supporting one another, not creating hazardous situations, not creating a toxic, antagonistic, confrontational scenarios that make it harder to do this. That's the stuff that needs to be watched out for. Agitators, all of that kind of stuff. It takes people having been to a couple actions to identify those kinds of things before they turn into something. And that all takes us being more comfortable with our signs out there, elbow to elbow with people. And I'm very happy it's gaining momentum. It's increasing slowly and becoming something people are more excited about at a nice trajectory. It wasn't going to be like an overnight thing where you get hundreds of thousands of people in the streets, but we're starting to see really encouraging numbers in how these actions are occurring. We've tried to check some of them out locally just to see what it's like. And we'll be there elbow to elbow with our own signs in short order. I am very sure I still have some ink drying, but I know that this is something that's big on college campuses. A lot of these institutions that are under attack, federal employees, veterans, there are huge cohorts of groups locally here on Long Island, but also around the country in all of these various cities and in unlikely places, cities you don't really know there's a big a federal building there or that have a bunch of people that are against the dealerships that are supporting some of these policies and shutting down agencies indirectly. That's the stuff we're going to hear about slowly. I think that's appropriate. It's what we should have expected, and it will take time for people to be more comfortable.
Well, I think what you will get out of going to a demonstration is a sense that you are not alone, a sense that you are part of a community that is growing. You'll meet other people. And you'll just realize how big this is. Look, there is nobody here that is not being adversely affected in one way or another by these crazy policies and decrees that have been happening. It's utter nonsense. You know, I was watching that CNBC World Channel, and people were one after another saying, you know, none of this makes any sense. It's like the people who did this have no idea what they're doing. And I say it's not like that. That is what it is. They don't know what they're doing. This whole thing about trade deficits, I don't think they even understand what that means, because it's basically they're trying to even the amount of trade that goes both ways. So if you buy, you know, $1 million worth of something from China, it's a deficit if they don't buy $1 million of something from you. And that's not really how trade works. Look, the trade is the money for the product. That's the trade. It doesn't mean that they have to come up with the same amount of product to give you for the same amount of money. That's how maybe a first grader might think of it, but it's not how it actually works. And I kept seeing, you know, economists saying things like that over and over again. I have a very limited understanding of all this, but I do know that what is going on right now, it borders on hysteria. I mean, hysteria from the high ranks of the U.S. government right now, you know, and these folks haven't even gotten started yet. They haven't even gotten to 100 days. It's only been a couple of months. Can you imagine what they are doing with rounding up people? That is the real horror, which hopefully we have some time to get to before the hour is up. But it'll be going on for quite a while, so we'll certainly have time. But I wanted to share some more good news, if that's possible.
Yes.
We talked about this in the past with cannabis being legalized in New York State. And we know it's been slow on Long Island, especially in Brookhaven Town, where they still have yet to open a dispensary. Islip was one of the towns that opted out. Remember, there are some towns that opted out. And Nassau County, thanks to Blakeman, opted out as well. Well, Islip, tonight, they are going to decide whether to change their minds and allow retail cannabis shops within the community. That's a policy shift that supporters say would be a financial boon for the town that could generate millions in new tax revenue each year. Now, if you recall, Islip's town board originally voted against dispensaries when New York legalized recreational cannabis back in 2021. But last month, four of the board's five members voted to revisit that decision, and a majority of those officials have since said they're on board with greenlighting retail cannabis at the board meeting tonight. So that is great news. And what we predicted would happen, you know, nobody ever goes the other way. Nobody ever says, you know, we opened the door to dispensaries and now we want to close that door. No, because they see the incredible amount of income that they generate. They see how it makes the streets safer, makes the black market a lot less existent in the communities. And it's generally seen as a good thing. I've visited many dispensaries, and it's always been a very positive experience. So expect that change. Islip Town voting to get on board. And let's see what other towns do the same thing. Let's see if Nassau County finally pushes Blakeman aside and says, no, we want this. This is, he just wants casinos. That's the vision of Nassau County that their county executive has, and it's really quite sad. On to letters. Hey, I wanted to let you know I enjoyed last week's program, March 24th. Actually, last week's program was April 1st, although you might be referring to the one 2 weeks ago because we did talk about this both weeks. I happened to be listening while walking in the woods, which is highly recommended, and I greatly appreciated the segment on controlled burns and Kyle's experience with forestry. Yeah, that was March 24th. And imagine listening to us while walking in the forest. That's kind of cool. Wow. Kind of spooky, too. But, that's one way to do it.
Don't get me started on forestry. I could go on and on.
Where do you listen to Off the Wall? Please write to us, otw@2600.com. I also wanted to thank you for continuing to cover the No Other Land saga. You'd mentioned the film is not widely available for streaming or in theaters. And while that does mostly appear to be true, I was able to find a number of smaller cinemas that are showing it. I opted to support the film and the theater by buying a ticket, even though I wasn't able to attend. Aside from talking about the film, sharing links to news stories, etc., I think this is a great way to help build buzz around it, money talks, and increase the likelihood that it does receive a wider release. Name is redacted here. And just to catch people up, No Other Land is the Oscar-winning documentary of this year about the Palestinian saga in the West Bank. It's made by both Israeli and Palestinian film producers, and it's a fascinating story. We're able to get a copy through nefarious means, I might point out, because it wasn't available anywhere else. Even going to Amazon in a different country and trying to view it there, nope, they won't let you do that. They know where you are. There are ways, though. If you're clever, there are ways to do it. And the thing is, it's an Oscar-winning film. It shouldn't be so hard to see, but this is typical of anyone who tries to look into the Palestinian issue more or talk about it more. You're either castigated yourself or access is denied. We got another letter on the same topic, actually, and I think this is for last week's show. No Other Land was playing at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. That's fairly local. I did not know that. But here's the really good news. It's also going to be playing at Stony Brook University on April 23rd. Thank you, Rose, for that info. That made my day. And, you know, it makes me so proud of this university because this is exactly what a university is all about. You know, sharing controversial ideas and thoughts, even though there's really nothing controversial about a documentary showing what is actually happening. You know, you can't both sides a story like this. Basically, the story is about a village that is being evacuated by the Israeli military because they want the land. And there's really a surprising absence of hostility towards Israelis in general, even though I could totally understand why you would be hostile. Certainly there's hostility towards the soldiers and the people who are actually shooting the people and doing horrible things. It's worth seeing. You know, open your mind up to this and judge for yourself. Don't let anybody tell you. if it's one thing or another. And then write to us. Tell us your thoughts. I'm looking at the webpage for the actual showing. Noise of the Land film screening, Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025, 6:30 p.m. in the Engineering Building, room 145 at Sternberg University. The event is co-sponsored by the Asian American Justice and Innovation Lab, Center for Changing Systems of Power, the Charles B. Wang Center, Department of Africana Studies, the Department of History, East End for Peace, Long Island Activists, Long Island Progressive Coalition, North Country Peace Group, and the New York Progressive Action Network. I had no idea there were so many different groups trying to get this film to play. And basically the summation, for half a decade, Basil Adra, a Palestinian activist, films his community of Masafa Yatta being destroyed by Israel's occupation as he builds an unlikely alliance with an Israeli journalist who wants to join his fight. It's a fascinating story and well worth a view. So again, Wednesday the 23rd, right here in Stony Brook, Engineering Building, room 145, 6:30 p.m. I'm sure it'll sell out, so track down that webpage. I don't have the exact URL, but the info I gave you should be enough to find it. And RSVP. And, yeah, that really is something. And I'm very proud of Stony Brook for having the guts to do this in spite of all the ignorance that's out there that prevents people from seeing material like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the issue covered in this, definitely from a documentary perspective, it's worth checking out. I mean, you can decide for yourself how the narrative or what the motives are, if they're genuine, if they're sort of authentic in your opinion, or if it's even a good or a bad documentary. But give it a chance. Don't let someone else tell you, oh, this is a bad movie, or it's covering it in a bad way.
Or it's got anti-Semitism in it, which it does not. I mean, you tell me
Find
where the anti-Semitism
yourself.
Is, unless you say that, putting Israeli military in a bad light is anti-Semitic. Well, then they can just do anything they want then. And get away with it. And here's a related story to that. Last week we talked about the medics that were executed, and they were executed. They were found in a mass grave, and Israel did this, and the United States supports it. Hell, the war criminal Netanyahu was here in Washington D.C. with Trump, you know, basically flouting the warrant for his arrest as a war criminal by the international courts, which neither this country nor Israel believes they are answerable to. It's disgusting. But phone video from one of the 15 Palestinian medics killed by Israeli forces last month appears to contradict Israeli claims. I don't know why the Associated Press is walking on eggshells here. It does contradict Israeli claims that their vehicles did not have emergency signals on when troops opened fire on them in southern Gaza. This is an incident that happened in southern Gaza. The footage shows the Red Crescent and civil defense teams driving slowly with their emergency vehicles' lights flashing, logos visible, as they pulled up to help an ambulance that had come under fire earlier. The teams do not appear to be acting unusually or in a threatening manner as three medics emerge and head toward the stricken ambulance. Their vehicles immediately come under a barrage of gunfire, which goes on for more than 5 minutes with brief pauses. The owner of the phone can be heard praying, "Forgive me, Mother, this is the path I chose to help people." Can you imagine saying that as you're being shot to death? 8 Red Crescent personnel, 6 civil defense workers, and a UN staffer were killed in that shooting, which I believe is an execution. Happened March 23rd by Israeli troops. They then bulldozed over the bodies, burying them in a mass grave. How is that not a war crime? And then they denied it. They denied that it happened. They accused the murdered people of harboring terrorists or acting like terrorists or doing something to justify this massacre.
And they said that they buried them to protect them from being scavenged by animals.
Yeah, they're so kind, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll save my salty remarks about that.
And now the truth has come out, and they're saying, yeah, mistakes were made. The mistake that was made was thinking you could get away with it. It doesn't take much to investigate and see if people were doing something wrong. And if you don't do that, well, then in your eyes, they weren't doing something wrong, were they? Absolutely disgusting. And that's the kind of thing that the people who castigate anyone who demonstrates as a member of Hamas or anti-Semitic, that's exactly what they don't want you to know. Well, we're about opening up minds here and considering different perspectives and listening to the actual evidence. And you know what? I said I was proud of Stony Brook. I'm also proud of New York because I'm seeing a lot of headlines here that are inspiring me. From the New York Times, New York warns Trump it will not comply with public school DEI order, the order for public schools to not have DEI programs in place. Yeah. So just get a summation of that. New York State officials have told the Trump administration they will not comply with its demands to end diversity, equity, and inclusion practices in public schools, despite the administration's threats to terminate federal education funding. We understand that the current administration seeks to censor anything it deems diversity, equity, and inclusion, but there are no federal or state laws prohibiting the principles of DEI. The U.S. Department of Education did not immediately respond to email requests for comment, probably because they got shut down. Didn't Trump dismantle the U.S. Department of Education? I'm not really sure why the Associated Press is writing to them for comments. So the Trump administration has ordered K-12 schools nationwide to certify within 10 days that they are following federal civil rights laws and ending any discriminatory DEI practices as a condition for receiving federal money. Now, that's their words.
That's a made-up thing.
The AP didn't put that in quotes. They should have, because it's saying that being inclusive is
reverse racism
and discriminatory. It's like, you know, saying we don't like racists. Oh, you're discriminating against racists, you know, or in their eyes, in their fantasy world, somehow you're discriminating against white people by giving everyone a chance.
I would like to know where I could file for my claim for having learned about the civil rights era.
And something else too. New York Democratic lawmakers are looking for ways to defend against Trump and his intended funding cuts. They're proposing legislation that would allow the state to keep the tax dollars it owes the federal government to fill the gaps caused by Trump. Think about that. New York is fighting back against the federal government. You know, it's not unlike what Texas did when they wanted to keep the razor wire at the border in the water, and people were basically getting carved up with that, and it was a bit inhumane. The federal government back then under Biden said, no, don't do that. And they said, you know what, we're going to do it anyway. Well, here's the other side. New York is fighting back, and about time. So this is the kind of thing we need to draw inspiration from, and hopefully other states will follow. I know a lot won't, but people need to know that they're not alone and that there are all kinds of ways that you can make your voice be heard. Yeah, your voice matters. It counts. And being at a demonstration is one way to show your opinions, to meet other people that feel the same way, and to send a strong message that we're not going to let all of this crap happen unremarked. So we're moving in a good direction. We really are. Even though the country is plummeting, the people are starting to react and do the right thing, and I think that's super important. All right, we are out of time, but I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to encourage people to support the radio station, WUSB.FM. Follow the links for pledging and pledge whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, a one-time pledge, whatever you can do. And write to us at otw@2600.com, otw@2600.com.
I remember the point of this place was never to all be the same, but rather to cooperate in the spirit of and because of our differences.
Sorry about that.
That goes for the station and the nation.
Absolutely. Until next time, this is Emmanuel for Kyle and Off the Wall. Good night. You got some free movement here right now. So you want all my best.
cry about it. The tears can help you heal inside. I know you lost your mind now, and you just tell yourself to hide. So you analyze it, you think you have control. Then you realize it's time that you let go. It's not your time.
Watched you all night.